Two. Oh, okay. This morning, my message is titled You're Part of the Family. And I'd like to start in Acts 5, verse 1 to 4. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession. And he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back a part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. So I was kind of just thinking about this passage for a while and praying about it. And there's a heart there that Ananias had that I think I've struggled with at times as well. And luckily for me, the consequences haven't quite worked out the same way. But I think what Ananias really wanted was he wanted the glory of everything without having to sacrifice as much, right? It's almost like, they talk about our next generation is the instant generation of, if you don't have the answer, you just look it up on Google, whereas, back in the day, they had to, use encyclopedias or, go to the library and actually do research, whereas, we're a generation where, if we don't have Wi-Fi or our data, everybody's just, lost and doesn't know what to do. Ananias, he wanted everybody to think, yeah, I'm just like all of them, look how much I'm doing, look how much I'm giving. I'm giving everything. I'm such a generous person. But he had this part of his heart that was like, I don't really want to give everything, though. That's actually going to cost me everything. So I'll just keep a bit. And there wasn't room for that in the church. Or, it conflicted with what the Holy Spirit was doing there. And I feel like part of the reason my title is You're Part of the Family, I think that he lost the vision of that he was part of the family. And I think that's, something that as a church, we can struggle with. I like to make a comparison here to sports, as we're talking about the appearance without the substance. And for me, when I'm playing basketball, sometimes you'll walk onto the court and you'll see guys who just—it looks like they just came out of Sport Check and spent $200. They have the nicest shoes. They have a brand new jersey, headband, wristband, tight compression leg pants, compression on the arm. And I normally find them hard to take seriously. Not only in basketball, the same thing exists in, soccer or baseball, whatever sport you play. You can tell when the person's gear is brand new. And I always assume they're not going to be good. It's maybe a faulty assumption at times, but most of the time it's based off my own experience that if somebody just came from the store and just bought all this great equipment and they look really, really great, most of the time that equipment has not actually been used. The people who scare me are the people whose shoes are worn down and that they've just been in the gym running laps and you can tell that they're ready to play. They're wearing loose baggy clothing and, you can see bruises on their elbows from the amount of times they've hit other people with their elbows. Those are the guys that really scare me on the court. And I think there are times in definitely in my own church life and my walk with God where I've been that person who shows up to church and I've got my new kicks on. I'm the guy who's I can, like any of us, you can put on appearance. And at the end of the day, God sees your heart. So it doesn't really matter what you're showing to everybody else. God is still looking at your heart. In Matthew 15:8, Jesus used Isaiah's prophecy to criticize the scribes and Pharisees of this exact thing. He said, "These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me." I think universally, we want to be the people with substance. We want to be the people that are sacrificing everything. We want to be the people that, as Mr. Levi shared a bit last week, you know, that have relationship and fellowship with Jesus. You know, we want to be those people. And sometimes we get it right, and then sometimes we miss the mark. And we all have moments where we miss it, but that's where I think it's important to remember that we're part of the family. And when we miss it, we course correct. So what does it mean to be part of the family? So I'll tell you what it means to be part of my family. And I think that my parents have been good examples for me of you know, what it means to be part of the church at large. So I think that it's a fairly appropriate comparison. Part of it is to be loved unconditionally, even through your mistakes. And not feeling, I mean, a little bit of guilt, but not too much guilt for all your mistakes. When we were kids, we used to have family meetings. I don't know if everybody had this, but we used to have family meetings when there was drama. Or when somebody threw a temper, or when, you know, we fought. And we fought a lot, especially because there's three, so it was always two on one in a different direction each time. And my favorite was Joel, because he'd switch sides in the middle of an argument if he felt that, like, he was about to lose. He'd just all of a sudden switch to from Joanne's team to on my team, and I'm just like, or he's just looking around, and Joanne's looking around, and you can never trust Joel in that situation. But we would have family meetings, and we'd sit together, and if I was really, really grumpy, and I was shouting or raising my voice, my mom would always turn to my dad and say, in Malay, he's tired. It's the only words I knew in Malay. Like, eventually I learned it. In Malay or Chinese, I don't know. I don't know what the language was, but I knew when they said he's tired, and I would just say, I'm not tired! And then eventually my dad would say, okay, go up to your room and take a nap, come back down, finish the family meeting peacefully. But even through all that, you know, like, there was never a point where, you know, the day after, I was, like, really, really dwelling on a problem that we had. Those problems were always resolved. Usually when I was young, they started up again the next week, but that was a completely new argument, unrelated to the old one, and then we'd have, you know, a loop of that problem. Being part of a family means the freedom to be yourself, especially to partake of the things that are your strengths. For me, when I was growing up, I really enjoyed sports. I enjoyed school. My brother also enjoyed sports. That is all. We liked different sports, though. You know, I liked basketball, and my brother, he liked basketball, but what he really loved was soccer. And, you know, my parents were always willing to, you know, pay for the tournaments, pay for the leagues, drive us to and from the different sports. I remember my dad used to give me rides in high school to basketball in the mornings, and it was early in the morning, and we went to high school in St. Mark's. And not only would he give me rides, but he'd pick up all my friends in the neighborhood. So we were the carpool. And I remember one week, it was a Friday night game that we had, and we had played terrible, and the coach said, I think I was in grade 10, and the coach said, all right, guys, when you guys are here on Monday, we're going to run. Like, we're just going to run, and we're going to run a lot. And so I did what any grade 10 kid would do, and I said, oh, my dad can't give me a ride. So me and the five people that I bring all didn't show up to practice. And I remember the coach came to me in the hall, and he was like, Jeremy, I'm very disappointed in you. And I was like, I couldn't get a ride. And even he knew that was a joke. He's like my dad knew, my coach knew that my dad was so faithful to me that I was lying. Like, he could just see right through it. He's like, I'm very disappointed in you. So I thought that was a good testimony of, you know, that looking back now, it was a bad decision. But my coach knew how faithful my dad was, that he was going to bring all of those kids to the basketball practice, regardless of, you know, what it was like out or The only time he wouldn't come is if I had not told him about it or something. Being part of the family is caring for each other with each other's best interests at heart. In our family, the family are the people who influence your decisions. They're the people who give you advice when you're making, you know, big decisions in your life. I remember when I was at work about 5 or 6 years ago, I had a new manager, and he wanted a meeting with me, and he said, "You know, Jeremy, this company could do really well, or, you know, we might fold. But if you really want to get noticed and you really want to build a good career, you really should be putting 10-hour days." And Grace had just been born at that time, so maybe about 4 years ago, or 4.5. And I'm not great at work because I kind of say what's on my mind, and people don't like that very much. Because I told him, if you really want me to work better, then I should just put in a more efficient 8 hours. Because I don't think that spending more time at work is going to solve any of those problems, specifically the problems that I was having. I said, you know, you can take off some of the work that's taking a lot of time and give it to somebody else if you'd like. But the person who was telling me this advice, I didn't know him very well, but I knew that he was on his second marriage, so he had like older kids, and then he had a new family of younger kids. And I thought, that's not really an example I want to follow. that's not my game plan for my life. You know, I kind of want to be home for my kids. And early on in my career, I decided that, you know, I really don't want to put in extra time at work if it's going to sacrifice time at home. And part of the reason I came to that decision is because from my vantage point, I saw my mother raise a lot of other people's kids. And they were great kids. They all sounded like my mother. Like all their mannerisms, their bad jokes, you know, they're singing as loudly as they could and singing opera, you know, a lot of Andrea Bocelli there. And I thought, you know, while I would like my kids to sound like my mother, that's okay for me. I also want to be a big influence on their lives as well. And, you know, after work, I get a couple hours and then it's bedtime. So I don't want to stay longer and shorten that window. So, you know, you have to be careful with who's giving you influence, because one of the other things we've talked about in our family is that the people who influence your decisions should be the people who are going to be there for you if those decisions don't work out. If somebody has to pick you up off the floor, if I listened to that person, worked 10-hour days, switched jobs, continued to work 10-hour days, you know, and things started to fall apart both at work and at home, whereas, you know, he really wasn't a big part of my life then, and I wouldn't have been able to count on him for any help after that. So his input, while it's his own input, but it's not what I wanted to listen to. I felt like it wasn't coming from a place where he was a big influence in my life. Let's go to Matthew 7:7-12. I know this is one of Matt's favorite verses. "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Um, I always like that verse because I don't know how to give good gifts. I know how to give good gifts to my kids because, like, it's really easy. It's like, you know, it's got to be pink. It's got to be one of the big brand names, something that they probably have seen on TV. It's very easy. But, like, throughout most of my relationship with Mila, it's normally either, like, something, like, way too big or way too small. Like, I really haven't found, like, the medium of how to give a good gift. Mila knows how to give a great gift, and especially knows how to give a great gift for the kids, because like 3 months before Christmas, she'll plant an idea in Grace's head of what Grace wants, and it'll be what she's already bought. Like, Grace is like, you know, not, I, it happened last year at Christmas, and she had bought her a pink unicorn, and all of a sudden Grace is running around the house saying, "I want a pink unicorn," and I was like, "Where did you even get that idea from?" And then she's, "Well, I talked to Mom, and that's what I want." So I thought about that, you know, like, if we know how to give good gifts to our kids, you're not going to give them, you know, a stone when they've asked for a cake. How much more does God have planned for you? You know, like, I think that, you know, I don't really know if I'm living exactly the right way or doing exactly the right thing that God will honor my prayer. And it's just kind of like an insecurity that you know, I don't really know if I'm worthy of this, you know. But the thing is, God loves us all. And he loves us so much more than what we think or what we imagine to know as love. Like, it's hard to relate to it because even as in a family, the love that is in a family, God's love is so much bigger than that, so much greater than that. And it's, you almost have to just expect that his grace is just so big. His love for you is just so big that, like, don't pretend that you can understand it. Just try to understand that it's there and it exists. And in those situations where, you know, you mess up, you can come and ask for forgiveness and know that you are forgiven. I find often, you know, you find that you might have to act to try and, like, fit in to the family or put up a front, and you don't because you're already in. You know, you're part of the family. You're loved and accepted as a part of that family, as a part of this church body, as a part of, you know, the house of God. And everybody plays a part. In our gym at work, there's a sign on the wall. My work is mostly engineers, so it's a sign of, like, a little Pokemon, and then it says, like, if you don't struggle, you won't grow, and it has, like, growing to, like, a big Pokemon, which is, like, something that, you know, all the nerds will enjoy. But I like to think of that, too, as just, like, a real-life situation, you know? Like, it's, like, it takes struggle to bring that growth, you know? We can't be Christians and expect that that our lives are then perfect because we are Christians, or, you know, we won't have trials or we won't have struggles because, you know, we're Christians and therefore our lives are going to go smoothly until we, you know, eventually pass away at the ripe old age of 95 in our sleep. It's just not how life will work, you know, and through those struggles and through those trials, it gives us an opportunity to grow closer to the family, closer to the people in our body, closer to God, especially, right? Through those trials and struggles, you know, we really have an opportunity to deepen our relationship with God and then, you know, course correct. For me, that's the big thing, you know, like, I am not always on course, but I always have the opportunity to course correct. I'd like to go to Mark 3:31. To 35. Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him. And a multitude was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you." But he answered them, saying, "Who is my mother or my brothers?" And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and my mother." And so that last part is really the key, that, you know, we have to continue to try to do the will of God. And Mark 12:30, as Pastor John shares often, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. That's the first commandment. And the second like it is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than these. Loving God and then loving the people around you. I think that is the will of God for our lives, like a big overarching will. I think in our individual lives we have, you know, specific things that, you know, through our relationship with God will determine as direction. But I think if that is our primary course, then it's easy for us to stay on the path if that's what we're following. I don't really have much more than that. Thumbs up. All right.